Glamour.
A couple of squads of Nipponese Air Force soldiers, armed with rifles and Nambus, pursue Bobby Shafto and his crew of hugs towards the Manila Bay seawall. If it comes to the point where they must stand and slug it out, they can probably kill a lot of Nips before they are overwhelmed. But they are here to find and assist the Altamiras, not to die heroically, and so they retreat through the neighborhood of Ermita. One of MacArthur's circling Piper Cubs catches sight of one of those Nip squads as it is clambering over the ruins of a collapsed building and calls in a strike. Artillery rounds spiral in from the north like long passes in a football game. Shafto and the Hooks try to time the incoming rounds, guessing at how many tubes are firing on them, trying to run from one place of concealment to the next when they think there's going to be a few seconds' pause in the shrapnel. Maybe half of the Nips are killed or wounded by this barrage, but they are fighting at such close quarters that two of Shafto's Hooks are hit as well. Shafto is trying to drag one of them out of danger when he looks down and sees that he is stomping across a mess of shattered white crockery that is marked with the name of a hotel, the same hotel where he slow-danced with glory on the night that the war started. The wounded Hooks are still capable of moving, and so the retreat continues. Shafto's calming down a bit, thinking about the situation with more clarity. The Hooks find a good defensive position and stall the attackers for a few minutes while he gets his bearings, works out a plan. 15 minutes later, the Hooks abandon their position and fall back in panic, or appear to. About half of the Nipponese squad rushes forward in pursuit and finds that they have been lured into a killing ground, a cul-de-sac created by the partial collapse of a building into an alley. One of the Hooks opens up with a Tommy gun while Shafto, who stayed behind, hiding in a burned-out car, heaves grenades at the other half of the squad, pinning them down and preventing them from coming to help their comrades, who are being noisily slaughtered. But these Nips are relentless. They regroup under a surviving officer and continue their pursuit. Shafto, now on his own, ends up being chased around the foundations of another hotel, a luxury place that rises up above the bay, near the American Embassy. He trips over the body of a young woman who apparently leapt, fell, or was thrown from one of the windows. Crouching behind some shrubbery for a breather, he hears a shrill keening drifting out of the hotel's windows. The place is full of women, he realizes, and all of them are either screaming or sobbing. His pursuers seem to have lost track of him. The Hooks have lost him, too. Shafto stays there for a while, listening to all of those women, wishing he could go inside and do something for them. But the place must be filled with Nip soldiers, or else the women wouldn't be screaming as they are. He listens carefully for a while, trying to ignore the lamentations of the women. A 14-year-old girl in a bloody nightgown plummets down from the 5th floor of the hotel, thuds into the ground like a sack of cement, and bounces once. Shafto closes his eyes and listens until he is absolutely sure that he does not hear any children. The picture's getting clearer now. The males are marched away and killed. The women are marched off in another direction. Young women without children are brought to this hotel. Women with children must have been taken somewhere else. Where? He hears Tommy gun fire on the other side of the hotel. Must be his buddies. He creeps around to a corner of the hotel and listens again, trying to figure out where they are. Somewhere in Rizal Park, he thinks. But then MacArthur's artillery opens up, hell for leather, and the world begins to heave beneath him like a rug being shaken, and he can't hear trench brooms or screaming women or anything. He has a view east and south towards the parts of Ermita and Malate, from which they have just come, and he can see big pieces of debris spinning up from the ground over there and gouts of dust. He has seen enough of war to know what it means. The Americans are advancing from the south now as well, pushing towards Intramuros. Shafto and his band of Hooks were operating on their own, but it appears that they have inadvertently served as harbingers of a big infantry thrust. Terrified by the barrage, a bunch of Nip soldiers stagger out of a side exit of the hotel, almost too drunk to stand, some of them still pulling their trousers up. Shafto disgustedly throws a grenade at them and then gets the hell out without bothering to examine the results. It is getting to the point where killing Nips is no fun anymore. There is no sense of accomplishment in it. It is a tedious and dangerous job that never seems to end. When will these stupid bastards knock it off? They are embarrassing themselves in front of the whole world. He finds his men in Rizal Park, beneath the shadow of Intramuros' ancient Spanish wall, disputing possession of a baseball diamond with what is left of the Nipponese squads that pursued them here. The timing is both good and bad. Any earlier, and Nip reinforcements in the surrounding neighborhood would have heard the skirmish, flooded into the park, and wiped them out. Any later, and the American infantry would be here. But Rizal Park is in the middle of a deranged urban battleground right now, and nothing makes any kind of sense. They have to impose their will on the situation, the kind of thing Bobby Shafto has gotten fairly good at. The one thing they have going for them is that the artillery is pointed elsewhere for the time being. Shafto squats down behind a coconut tree and tries to figure out how the hell he is going to reach that baseball diamond, which is a couple of hundred yards away across totally flat, open ground. He knows the place. Uncle Jack took him to a baseball game there. Wooden bleachers rise along the left and right field lines. Beneath each one is a dugout. Shafto knows how battles work, and so he knows that one of those dugouts is full of Nips and one is full of Hooks, and that they are pinned down in them by each other's fire, just like Great War troops in their opposing trenches. There are a few buildings under the bleachers, containing toilets and a refreshment stand. The Nips and the Hooks will be creeping through those buildings right now, trying to get into a position from which they can shoot into the dugouts. A Nipponese grenade flies toward him from the direction of the left field bleachers, making a stripping noise as it passes through the fronds of a palm tree. Shafto ducks his head behind another tree so that he can't see the grenade. It explodes and tears the clothing and a good deal of the skin from one of his arms and one of his legs. But like all Nip grenades, it is poorly made and miserably ineffectual. Shafto turns around and uncorks a spume of 45 caliber rounds in the general direction the grenade came from. This should give the thrower something to think about while Shafto gets his bearings. This is actually a stupid idea because he runs out of ammunition. He has a few rounds in his Colt, and that's it. He also has one grenade left. He considers throwing it towards the baseball diamond, but his throwing arm is in pretty bad shape now. Besides, Jesus Christ, that baseball diamond is just too far away. Even in peak condition, he cannot throw a grenade from here to there. Perhaps one of those corpses out in the grass between here and there isn't really a corpse. Shafto crawls towards them on his belly and establishes that they are most definitely dead people. Giving the field a wide berth, he begins working his way around behind home plate toward the right field line, where his people are. He would love to sneak up on the Nips from behind, but that grenade thrower really threw a fright into him. Where the hell is he? The firing from the dugouts has become sporadic. They have stalemated now and are trying to conserve ammunition. Shafto risks rising to a crouch. He runs for about 3 paces before he sees the door to the women's toilet swing open and a man jump out, winding up like Bob Feller getting ready to throw a fastball right down the middle of the plate. Shafto fires his 45 once, but the weapon's absurdly vicious recoil jerks it right out of his lamed hand. The grenade comes flying towards him, perfectly on target. Shafto dives to the ground and scrambles for his 45. The grenade actually bounces off his shoulder and falls, spinning into the dust, making a fizzing noise. But it doesn't explode. Shafto looks up. The Nip is standing framed in the women's room door. His shoulders slump miserably. Shafto recognizes him. There's only one Nip who could throw a grenade like that. He lies there for a few moments, counting syllables on his fingers, then stands up, cups his hand around his mouth, and hollers, "Pineapple fastball! Guns of Manila applaud! Hit by pitch, free base!" Gutto, Dango, and Bobby Shafto lock themselves inside the women's room and share a Nip from a bottle of port that the former has looted from a store somewhere. They spend a few minutes catching up with each other in a general way. Gutto, Dango is already somewhat drunk, which makes his grenade-throwing performance all the more impressive. "I'm hopped to the gills on Benzedrine," Shafto says.
Keeps you going, but kind of screws up your aim.
I noticed,
Goto Dango says. He is so skinny and haggard, he looks more like some hypothetical sick uncle of Goto Dango's. Shafto pretends to take offense at this and drops into a judo stance. Goto Dango laughs uneasily and waves him off.
No more fighting,
he says. A rifle bullet passes through the women's room wall and digs a crater into a porcelain sink.
We gotta come up with a plan,
Shafto says.
The plan. You live, I die,
Goto Dango says.
Fuck that,
Shafto says.
Hey, don't you idiots know you're surrounded?
We know,
Goto Dango says wearily.
We know for a long time.
So give up, you fucking morons. Wave a white flag and you can all go home.
It is not Nipponese way.
So come up with another fucking way. Show some fucking adaptability.
Why are you here?
Goto Dango asks, changing the subject.
What is your mission?
Shafto explains that he's looking for his kid. Goto Dango tells him where all of the women and children are, in the Church of St. Augustine in Intramuros.
Hey,
Shafto says.
If we surrender to you, you'll kill us, right?
Yes.
If you guys surrender to us, we won't kill you. Promise. Scout's honor.
For us, living or dying is not the important thing,
Goto Dango says.
Hey, tell me something I didn't fucking already know,
Shafto says.
Even winning battles isn't important to you, is it?
Goto Dango looks the other way, shamefaced.
Haven't you guys figured out yet that bonsai charges don't fucking work?
All of the people who learned that were killed in bonsai charges,
Goto Dango says. As if on cue, the Nips in the left field dugout begin screaming, Bonsai! And charge as one out onto the field. Shafto puts his eye up to a bullet hole in the wall and watches them stumbling across the infield with fixed bayonets. Their leader clambers up the pitcher's mound as if he's going to plant a flag there and takes a slug in the middle of his face. His men are being dismantled all around him by thoughtfully placed rifle slugs from the Hook's dugout. Urban warfare is not the métier of the Hook Ballahops, but calmly slaughtering bonsai-charging Nipponese is old hat. One of the Nips actually manages to crawl all the way to the first base coach's box. Then a few pounds of meat come flying out of his back, and he relaxes. Shafto turns to see that Goto Dango is aiming a revolver at him. He chooses to ignore this for a moment.
See what I mean?
I have seen it many times before.
Then why aren't you dead?
Shafto asks the question with all due flippancy, but it has a terrible effect on Goto Dango. His face scrunches up and he begins to cry.
Aw, shit. You pull a gun on me and start bawling at the same time? How unfair can you get? Why don't you kick some fucking dirt in my eyes while you're at it?
Goto Dango lifts the revolver to his own temple. But Shafto sees that one coming a mile away. He knows Nips well enough by this point to figure out when they are about to go harry-carry on you. Shafto jumps forward as soon as the barrel of the revolver begins to move. By the time it is against Goto Dango's skull, Shafto has his finger stuck into the gap between the hammer and the firing pin. Goto Dango collapses to the floor, sobbing piteously. It just makes Shafto want to kick him.
Knock it off,
he says.
What the fuck is eating at you?
I came to Manila to redeem myself, to get back my lost honor,
Goto Dango says.
I could have done it here. I could be dead on that field right now, and my spirit going to Yasukuni. But then you came. You ruined my concentration.
Concentrate on this, dumb shit,
Shafto says.
My son is in a church right over on the far side of that wall with a bunch of other helpless women and children. If you want to redeem yourself, why not help me get him out alive?
Goto Dango seems to have gone into a trance now. His face, which was blubbering just a minute ago, has solidified into a mask.
I wish I could believe what you believe,
he says.
I have died, Bobby. I was buried in a rock tomb. If I were a Christian, I could be born again now and be a new man. Instead, I must go on living and accept my karma.
Well, shit! There's a Padre right out there in the dugout. He can Christianize your ass in about 10 seconds flat.
Bobby Shafto strides across the bathroom and swings the door open. He is startled to see a man standing just a few paces away. The man is dressed in an old but clean khaki uniform, devoid of insignia except for a pentagon of stars on the collar. He has jammed a wooden match down into the bowl of a corncob pipe and is puffing away futilely. But it's as if all of the oxygen has been sucked out of the air by the burning of the city. He throws the match away in disgust, then looks up into the face of Bobby Shafto, staring at him through a pair of dark aviator sunglasses that give his gaunt face the appearance of a skull. His mouth forms into an O for a moment, then his jaw sets.
"Shafto! Shafto! Shafto!" he says.
Bobby Shafto feels his body stiffening to attention. Even if he had been dead for a few hours, his body would do this out of some kind of dumb, ingrained reflex.
"Sir, yes, sir,"
he says wearily. The general composes his thoughts for a half a second and then says,
"You were supposed to be in Concepcion. You failed to be there. Your superiors did not know what to think. They have been worried sick about you, and the Department of the Navy has been positively insufferable ever since they became aware that you were working for me. They assert, in the most high-handed way, that you know important secrets and should never have been placed in danger of capture. In short, your whereabouts and your status have been the subject of the most intense, nay, feverish speculation for the last several weeks. Many supposed that you were dead, or worse, captured. This distraction has been most unwelcome to me, inasmuch as the planning and execution of the reconquest of the Philippine Islands have left me little time to devote to such nagging distractions."
An artillery shell rips through the air and detonates in the bleachers, sending jagged fragments of planks about the size of canoe paddles whirling through the air all around them. One of them embeds itself like a javelin in the dirt between the general and Bobby Shafto. The general takes advantage of this to draw breath and then continues as if he were reading this from a script.
"And now, when I least expect it, I encounter you here, many leagues distant from your assigned post, out of uniform, in a disheveled condition, accompanied by a Nipponese officer, violating the sanctity of a lady's powder room. Shafto, have you no sense whatsoever of military honor? Do you not respect decorum? Do you not believe that a representative of the United States military should comport himself with more dignity?"
Shafto's kneecaps are joggling up and down uncontrollably. His guts have become molten, and he feels strange bubbling processes going on in his rectum. His molars are chattering together like a teletype machine. He senses Goto Dango behind him and wonders what the poor bastard can possibly be thinking.
"Begging your pardon, General, not to change the subject or anything, but are you here all by yourself?"
The general juts his chin towards the men's room.
"My aides are in there relieving themselves. They were in a great hurry to do so, and it is good that we came upon this place, but none of them considered invading the powder room,"
he says severely.
"I apologize for that, sir,"
Bobby Shafto says hastily,
"and for all of those other things that you mentioned, but I still think of myself as a Marine, and Marines do not make excuses, so I will not even try."
"That is not satisfactory. I need an explanation for where you've been."
"I have been out in the world," Bobby Shafto says, "getting butt-fucked by fortune."
The door of the men's room opens, and one of the general's aides walks out, woozy and bow-legged. The general ignores him. He is gazing right past Shafto now.
"Pardon my manners, sir,"
Shafto says, turning sideways.
"Sir, my friend Goto Dango. Goto-san, say hi to General of the Army Douglas MacArthur."
Goto Dango has been standing there like a pillar of salt this whole time, utterly dumbfounded. But now he snaps out of it and bows very low. MacArthur nods crisply. His aide is staring darkly at Goto Dango and has already drawn his Colt.
"Pleasure," the general says airily. "Pray tell, what sort of business were you two gentlemen prosecuting in the ladies?"
Bobby Shafto knows how to lunge for an opening.
It's very funny you should ask that question, sir,"
he says offhandedly.
But Goto-san just now saw the light and converted to Christianity.
Some nips on top of the wall open up on them with a machine gun. The flimsy tumbling rounds crack through the air and thump into the ground. General of the Army Douglas MacArthur stands motionless for a long time, lips pursed. He sniffles once. Then he removes his aviator glasses carefully and wipes his eyes on the immaculate sleeve of his uniform. He pulls out a neatly folded white hanky and wraps it around his hawk-like nose and honks into it a few times. He folds it up carefully and puts it back in his pocket, squares his shoulders, and then walks right up to Goto Dengo and wraps him up in a big, manly bear hug. The remainder of the general's aides emerge from the shitter-um block and view the scene with reticence and palpable tension all over their faces. Profoundly mortified, Bobby Shafto looks down at his feet, wiggles his toes, and caresses the linear scab running upside his head where the ore clocked him a few days ago. The machine gun crew up on the wall are being picked off, one by one, by a sniper. They writhe and scream operatically. The hooks have come up from the dugout and stumbled into this little tableau. They all stand motionless, with their jaws hanging down around their navels. Finally, MacArthur unhands the stiff body of Goto Dengo, steps back dramatically, and presents him to his staff.
"Meet Goto-san," he announces. "You have all heard the expression, the only good nip is a dead nip? Well, this young fellow is a counterexample. And as we learned in mathematics, it only takes one counterexample to disprove the theorem."
His staff observe cautious silence.
"It seems only fitting that we take this young fellow to the Church of St. Augustine, over yonder and in Tomorrow's, to carry out the sacrament of baptism," the general says.
One of the aides steps forward, hunched over in that he's expecting to get a slug between the shoulder blades any minute.
"Sir, it is my duty to remind you that Intermaros is still controlled by the enemy."
"Then it is high time we made our presence felt," MacArthur says. "Shafto will get us there. Shafto and these fine Filipino gentlemen."
The general throws one arm around Goto Dengo's neck in a highly affectionate, companionable way, and begins strolling with him towards the nearest gate.
"I would like you to know, young man, that when I set up my headquarters in Tokyo, which, God willing, should be within a year, I want you there bright and early the first day."
"Yes, sir,"
Goto Dengo says. All things considered, it is unlikely he would say anything else. Shafto draws a deep breath, tilts his head back, and stares up into a smoky heaven.
"God,"
he says.
"Usually I bow my head when I'm talking to you, but I figure this is a good time for us to have a face-to-face. You see and know all things, and so I will not explain the situation to you. I would just like to submit a request for you. I know you are getting requests from lonely soldiers all over the fucking place at this time, but since this one has to do with a shitload of women and children, and General MacArthur too, maybe you can jump me to the top of the stack? You know what I want. Let's get it done."
He borrows a small, straight 20-round Tommy gun magazine from one of his comrades, and they set out for Intramuros. The gates are sure to be guarded, so Shafto and the Hooks run up the sloping walls instead, directly beneath that wiped-out machine gun nest. They turn the gun around into Intramuros and plant one of the wounded Hooks there to operate it. The first time Shafto gazes into the town, he nearly falls off the wall. Intramuros is gone. If he didn't know where he was, he would never recognize it. Essentially, all of the buildings have been leveled. Manila Cathedral and the Church of St. Augustine still stand, both with heavy damage. A few of the fine old Spanish houses still exist as hasty freehand sketches of their former selves, missing roofs, wings, or walls. But most of the blocks are just jumbles of masonry and shattered red roof tiles, with smoke and steam seething out of them. There are dead bodies all over the place, sowed all over the neighborhood like Timothy seed broadcast onto freshly plowed soil. The artillery is mostly stopped, there being nothing left to destroy. But small arms and machine gun fire sound on almost every block. Shafto is thinking he'll have to assault one of the gates,
but before he can even come up with a plan, MacArthur is up there with the rest of his group, having scrambled up the rampart behind them. This is evidently the first time that the general has gotten a good look at Intermaros, because he is stunned and, for once, speechless. He stands there for a long time with his mouth open, and begins to draw fire from a few nips hidden in the wreckage below. The turned-around machine gun silences them. It takes them several hours to make their way up the street and into the church of St. Augustine. A bunch of nips have barricaded themselves inside the place, along with what sounds like every hungry infant and irritable 2-year-old in Manila. The church is just one side of a large compound that includes a monastery and other buildings. Many of the structures have been torn open by artillery fire. The treasures hoarded in that place by the monks over the course of the last 500 years have tumbled out into the street, blown all over the neighborhood like shrapnel and commingled with the bayoneted corpses of Filipino boys are huge oil paintings of Christ being scourged, fantastic wooden sculptures of the Romans hammering the spikes through his wrists and ankles, marbles of Mary holding the dead and mangled Christ in her lap, tapestries of the whipping post and the cat-o'-nine-tails in action, blood coursing out of Christ's back through hundreds of parallel gouges. The nips, still inside the church, defend its main doors with the suicidal determination that Shafto has begun to find so tedious. But thanks to the general's artillery, there are plenty of other ways, besides doors, to get into the place now. So it is that, even while a company of American infantry mount a frontal assault on the main entrance, Bobby Shafto and his hooks, Goto Dango, the general, and his aides, are already kneeling in a little chapel in what used to be a part of the monastery. The padre leads them through a couple of extremely truncated prayers of thanksgiving and baptizes Goto Dango with water from a font, with Bobby Shafto taking the role of beaming parent and General of the Army Douglas MacArthur serving as godfather. Shafto later remembers only one line of the ceremony. "Do you reject the glamour of evil and refuse to be mastered by it?" says the padre.
"I do,"
says MacArthur, with tremendous authority, even as Bobby Shafto is muttering,
"Fuck yes."
Goto Dango nods, gets wet, and becomes a Christian. Bobby Shafto excuses himself and goes wandering through the compound. It seems as big and crazy as that Casbah in Algiers, all gloomy and dusty on the inside, and filled with still more La Passion art, made by artists who had obviously witnessed whippings firsthand and who didn't need any priest spouting little homilies about the glamour of evil. He goes up and down the great stairway once, for old time's sake, remembering the night glory took him here. There is a courtyard with a fountain in the center, surrounded by a long shaded gallery where Spanish friars could stroll in the shade and look out over the flowers and hear the birds singing. Right now, the only things singing are shells passing overhead, but little Filipino kids are running races up and down the gallery, and their mothers and aunts and grannies are encamped in the courtyard, drawing water from the fountain and cooking rice over piles of burning chair legs. A gray-eyed 2-year-old with a makeshift bludgeon is chasing some bigger kids down a stone arcade. Some of his hairs are the color of Bobby's, and some are the color of glory's. And Bobby Shafto can see gloriness shining almost fluoroscopically out of his face. The boy has the same bone structure that he saw on the sandbar a few days ago, but this time it is clothed in chubby pink flesh. The flesh admittedly bears bruises and abrasions, no doubt honorably earned. Bobby squats down and looks the little Shafto in the eye, wondering how to begin to explain everything. But the boy says,
"Bobby Shafto, you have boo-boos,"
and drops his club and walks up to examine the wounds on Bobby's arm. Little kids don't bother to say hello, they just start talking to you. And Shafto figures that's a good way to handle what would otherwise be pretty damn awkward. The Altamiras have probably been telling little Douglas M. Shafto since the day he was born that one day Bobby Shafto would come in glory from across the sea. That he has now done so is just as routine and yet just as much of a miracle as that the sun rises every day.
I see that you and yours have displayed adaptability, and that is good,
says Bobby Shafto to his son, but sees immediately that he is not getting through to the kid at all.
He feels a need to get something into the kid's head that is going to stick, and this need is stronger than the craving for morphine or sex ever was.
So he picks up the boy and carries him through the compound, down semi-collapsed hallways and over settling rubble heaps and between dead Nipponese boys to that big staircase, and shows him the giant slabs of granite, tells how they were laid, one on top of the next, year by year, as the galleons full of silver came from Acapulco. Doug M. Shafto has been playing with blocks, so he zeroes in on the basic concept right away. Dad carries son up and down the stairway a few times. They stand at the bottom and look up at it. The block analogy has struck deep. Without any prompting, Doug M. raises both arms over his head and hollers, "So big!" And the sound echoes up and down the stairs. Bobby wants to explain to the boy that this is how it's done. You pile one thing on top of the next, and you keep it up and keep it up. Sometimes the galleon sinks in a typhoon. You don't get your slab of granite that year. But you stick with it, and eventually you end up with something so big. He wishes that he could also make some further point about Glory and how she's been hard at work building her own staircase. Maybe if he was a word man like Enoch Root, he would be able to explain, but he knows that this is going way over the toddler's head, just as it went over Bobby's head when Glory first showed him the steps. The only thing that'll stick with Douglas MacArthur Shafto is the memory that his father brought him here and carried him up and down the staircase. And if he lives long enough and thinks hard enough, maybe he'll come to understand it too, the way Bobby does. That is a good enough start. Word has gotten around among the women in the courtyard that Bobby Shafto has arrived, better late than ever, and so he does not have time for meaningful speeches anyway. The Altamiras send him out on an errand to find Carlos, an 11-year-old boy who was rounded up a few days ago when the Nips swept through Malate. Shafto finds MacArthur and Goto Dengo first and excuses himself. Those two are deeply involved in a discussion of Goto Dengo's tunnel-building acumen and how it might be put to use during the rebuilding of Nippon, a project that the general is eager to launch as soon as he finishes reducing the entire Pacific Rim to rubble.
"You have sins to atone for, Shafto," the general says, "and you can't atone for them by getting down on your knees and saying Hail Marys."
"I understand that, sir,"
Shafto says.
"I have a little job that needs doing, precisely the kind of thing for which a marine raider with parachute training would be ideally suited."
"What's the Department of the Navy going to think of that, sir?"
"I have no intention of letting the swabbies know I found you until you have carried out this mission. But when you are finished, all is forgiven."
"I'll be right back," Shafto says.
"Where are you going, Shafto?"
"Got some other people who need to forgive me first."
He heads in the direction of Fort Santiago with a reconstituted, rearmed, and beefed-up squad of hooks. The old Spanish fort has been liberated within the last couple of hours by the Americans. They have thrown open the doors to the dungeons and the subterranean caverns along the Pasig River. Finding 11-year-old Carlos Altamira is, then, a problem of sorting through several thousand corpses. Almost all of the Filipinos who were herded into this place by the Nips died, either through out-and-out execution or by suffocating in the dungeons, or by drowning when the tide came up the river and flooded the sills. Bobby Shafto doesn't really know what Carlos looked like, and so the best he can do is cull out the young-looking corpses and present them to members of the Altamira family for inspection. The Benzedrine he took a couple of days ago has worn off, and he feels half-dead himself. He trudges through the Spanish dungeon with a kerosene lantern, shining the dim yellow light on the faces of the dead, muttering the words to himself like a prayer.
Do you reject the glamour of evil and refuse to be mastered by it?